From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Duncan in for Beth Rujak. As the cost of renting a home goes up, more Californians are looking to their local governments for stronger tenant protections. But a law passed in the mid-90s prevents cities from crafting their own tenant protections. California voters will be voting on a ballot initiative that would repeal that law and give city and county governments more leeway in regulating the local rental market. At the heart of the debate is whether or not rent controls can actually curb rising housing costs. Here to explain the original law and potential effects of that ballot measure is Cap Radio's Chris Nichols. Chris, welcome.
Good morning, Beth.
Good morning. Okay, so before we get off into the weeds, so to speak, on rent control laws, let's talk a little bit about why this issue's in the headlines. How does this fit into the affordable housing shortage that we've been covering?
Well, I think people in Sacramento and across the state are familiar with the exploding rents that we've seen in recent years. It's more and more difficult for many people to afford to stay in their apartment. Many people are being displaced because rents are increasing so quickly, both here in Sacramento and, of course, the Bay Area. And so this has led to more and more calls for rent control. And so that's how it fits into this affordability topic.
And normally you're our PolitiFact reporter, so how did you get into pursuing this particular story?
That's right. Well, we heard this sort of persistent argument, especially early this year, from landlords and developers that if rent control was expanded in California, it would lead to a real slowdown in housing construction and that it would actually lead to the shrinking of the supply of rental housing, that it would have these sort of perverse, unintended consequences. And with our role through PolitiFact to examine the facts and see if there's supporting evidence behind claims that you hear, we thought this would be really interesting. And then, of course, this morphed into our California Dream project that we're part of to look at housing issues and affordability issues.
So when we look back at the Costa-Hawkins rent control law, did that have unintended consequences?
Well, I think if you talk to renters and you talk to advocates for renters, they would say yes. They would say that law, which essentially limits how far cities can go in applying rent control. They can't apply rent control to all apartments in a city. They essentially have to stop at the apartments built in 1995 or before. So sort of the older stock of rental housing in a community can have rent control, but it can't apply to newer construction. So I think you would have a lot of people, especially in some of those newer apartments, who are seeing the rents go up and up and up without any controls, without any yearly limits. They would say that law, Costa-Hawkins, in place right now, has had the consequence of driving up their rents.
And of course, the landlords would say it's expensive to build new apartment buildings and homes, and we're going to lose money. Why would we be investing in new development?
That's right. That's right. I think landlords and developers are concerned particularly about the possibility that, well, I should say developers are really concerned about the idea that this could apply to new construction. They say that builders will simply go to other cities and build apartments there, cities that don't have rent control on new construction, that there's a real concern. You're hearing that in Sacramento as well.
You spoke with an economics professor at Stanford for your story. Tell us a little bit about Professor Rebecca Diamond and why you spoke to her.
Well, she is the co-author of a widely discussed report from last fall on rent control, and it looked at what happened in San Francisco in the mid-1990s when that city expanded its rent control to apply to more and more apartments, and they wanted to know what kind of an effect did that have on rents, on the rental stock? Did the more and more apartments get created as a result, or did they shrink? So we thought it was a pretty interesting study. Some of their key findings, and we'll hear from Rebecca Diamond here in a moment, are that landlords essentially, when they had rent control imposed on their apartments, they would convert those apartments to condominiums to escape the limits of rent control. Or in some extreme cases, they would even knock down entire buildings and rebuild them to escape these limits. Rent control in San Francisco does not apply to new construction. So in order to continue to make a profit and keep rents as high as they wanted, they would sort of take these extreme measures. And Diamond and her colleagues there at Stanford found that this really had some adverse effects.
So we find landlords pursuing both of these strategies because it's much more profitable for them to supply owner occupancy housing or new construction housing. And this is particularly worrisome from an affordability point of view, because not only does this decrease the supply of rentals as a whole in the city, which we find that it does, but it replaces it with high-end condos and high-end new construction, which really caters to high-income households' tastes and likely fuel gentrification in the city.
So it sounds like it displaced people, Chris. How do the residents feel about this situation?
Well, I mean, just the numbers from the study show that at least in San Francisco, and in this case, looking at this case alone, there was a overall reduction, a shrinking of the supply of rental housing by about 5%, and there was about a 5% increase in the overall rents in the city. On the other side of this, Diamond and her colleagues found that there certainly were real concrete benefits for the people who got rent control. The renters who got it, they saved anywhere from about $2,000 to up to $6,000 per year if rent control protections were in place at their apartment. And so a lot of people point to that and say that's the only way that some people can afford to remain in their apartment and avoid being displaced and losing their community. And so there's sort of, they found, you know, positives on one side, but some real concerns as to the overall rental population when you see a shrinking of the supply because landlords convert over to condos or to new construction. And there's also people that have a real problem with the study.
I'm talking with Cap Radio's Chris Nichols about his reporting on rent control laws for the California Dream Project. So we've talked a little bit about the landlord side of the equation, and we've touched on tenants, but let's dig in a little bit to why tenant groups are pushing for this ballot measure.
Well, again, I think they see this as just so necessary in a time when you have, you know, double-digit rent increases from year to year in some communities. Sacramento had the fastest rising rents last year, according to one study. They say that these market forces, these are things that the average renter just can't contend with. Wages are not going up anywhere near as much as costs are going up. And they've also pushed back on this idea that where landlords and developers say rent control has these perverse effects. They say that there's more going on. And I know we're going to hear from Dean Preston. He's the executive director of Tenants Together. That's a statewide advocacy organization. I spoke with him about the Stanford study and its findings, and he said essentially the Stanford study blames the wrong thing. It blames rent control when city leaders in San Francisco or other cities could have passed restrictions, could have prevented or made off limits these conversions to other types of housing.
There will always be some who are not satisfied with a fair return and who want to try to convert to more lucrative uses. The Stanford study you mentioned, for example, blames that conversion on rent control rather than blaming that conversion of units on the folks who are converting the units and on the unwillingness to prevent conversion.
So, Chris, do we have any idea how this might factor into the construction of new homes in California?
I think it's hard to say. I mean, you know, apartments are one thing. New homes might be a different category. I think you have, from the renter's perspective, you make it very, very difficult for someone who's renting to sock away money to save to someday achieve that dream of home ownership. So there may be more and more people who are left out of the home ownership market. But it's just as far as the home construction, the single family home construction, I don't know. I know that this effort to expand rent control in California, a lot of folks do want to apply rent control to single family homes because quite a few people do rent single family homes. And right now, the state law prevents cities from applying rent control to condominiums and single family homes. It only applies to these older apartments that we talked about.
I'm curious, is there any talk about subsidized housing in all of this where the profit is taken out and the government builds houses for students and other people?
That really, no matter who you talk to, folks who support rent control or oppose it, they all do say that one of the big answers is to subsidize people who, you know, to create more affordable housing, whether it's rent controlled or not, to make sure that there's that supply out there for Californians. So I think people do agree on that. They disagree on whether rent control should also be imposed on new apartments.
That's Chris Nichols talking about rent control. Chris, thanks so much for coming in this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Beth.
We have more on our website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.